Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the scorecard. Russia and Trump want a resolution to the Ukraine conflict. Kyiv and the Europeans don't. This is where we stand. Ukraine will continue to lose ground and most likely American support. Ukraine is a lost cause. Zelensky has chosen this fate. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Peter Kuznick in Bethesda. He is a professor of history at American University, as well as co-author with Oliver Stone of The Untold History of the United States. In Cornwall, we have Steve Jeremy. He is a retired Royal Navy Commodore. And here in Moscow, we cross to Arnaud Devollet. He is a political consultant. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Peter, let's start out with you. We've all been following the pace of, I guess you could call them negotiations, or particularly Steve Witkoff's multiple visits to Moscow. And there's a lot of noise around the Trump administration, how the U.S. wants to proceed. I suppose the Russians are being very patient, but I'm going to ask you, the longer this takes, the more unlikely there will be a diplomatic outcome? Peter.
Eventually, there's going to be a diplomatic outcome. The question is, how soon is this going to happen? The most recent development is that the United States and Ukraine just signed this mineral deal. It hasn't been ratified yet by the Ukrainians, but if anything, that gives the United States more skin in the game and might make the United States more willing to give aid and more lethal aid. You know, Trump's been on back and forth.
Do you think that's a good idea, Peter? Do you think that's a good idea to give more aid and more lethal aid?
No, because I agree with your sense that the longer this goes on, the more suffering, the worse position the Ukrainians are going to be in. This goes on 6 more months, it's going to mean scores of thousands more dead and wounded on both sides, and Russia having more of Ukrainian territory. It's not in Ukraine's short-term or long-term interest to prolong this, and it's not really in Russia's interest to prolong this. So why don't cooler heads and more reasonable heads prevail, and we'll sit down and end this? I mean, Putin's been saying now, he says, he wants direct negotiations. In the past, he said different things. But I think it's time. The world thinks it's time. And I was just in Russia last week for the Moscow International Film Festival. And the sense I'm getting from the Russians also is that they're weary of this. I saw that happen in the United States with all the U.S. wars, and it's happening with this war. And the world is weary of this. And it also, the longer it goes on, the more dangerous there is of a possible expansion to World War III. We saw how
Peter, you're not going to get an argument from me, obviously. Let me go to Steve here. So in whose interest is it to have this conflict continue? I mean, Peter has given a wonderful checklist of reasons why it should end. It ends soon.
It's in nobody's interest that it continues, but I think we have to reflect the realities on the ground, but also the balance of power between the parties, which is not understood in the West. So I think one of the key concerns is that the West are shooting hard for a ceasefire. And they're missing a fundamental point, which is that Russia is not interested in a ceasefire without having first established the long-term security architecture to allow it to get to peace. So I think the West has got its sequencing wrong. It wants to go ceasefire, then the security architecture. And Russians are saying, as I would as a former military person, well, I don't want to do that because actually I'm going to lose the initiative that I've got on the ground. I'm winning. But I think as soon as the Europeans and the Americans can accept this, that actually that we need to work hard towards to get towards that long-term security architecture, then we can be in a position to actually establish the
Steve, let me stay with you. I agree with you. I've been using this term European security architecture from the very beginning. But will that security architecture include Russia? Because the way it's talked about in the West, Russia doesn't have any security. It has no legitimate security interests. We've heard this from a number of European leaders. Isn't that part of the equation that needs to be equalized?
Yeah, I'm afraid that what you've just described is the reason we are where we are. The issue is that we have had a NATO architecture, which I was in part in my previous military career. And the strategy that we've been following in that NATO architecture is one of confrontational security. Now, that is the direct result of that, is why we've arrived at the war that we have. What we've been much better at is looking at a different architecture in which we could start to talk about cooperative security. And there is no better architecture, at least in the short term, as a starter for the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. I mean, the clues in the title, Security, Cooperation in Europe. We can get towards that sort of architecture, but also that sort of strategy, and I think we'll be in the right place. I personally think that NATO is well past its sell-by date and an impediment to the ending of this war rather than a part of the solution.
Yeah, I don't know. The problem with the way the negotiations are presented in the West, particularly in the UK and the United States, is that there's somehow, in some way, negotiations are illegitimate because dealing with Russia is an illegitimate proposition. And we have people, which I'd like to know in the future, who is still supporting Zelensky in the West that is against any kind of peace process. But the problem is that negotiations are considered Munich all over again. That's another one of the problems we face.
Yes, indeed, the whole problem in this conflict is also the type of rhetorics that have been thrown mostly from the West to anybody who's showing a critical appreciation of the situation. We've heard revisionist power, and revisionist obviously, you know, brings a lot into, you know, the discussion as far as certain thematics. But the main problem, I think, is, as you said, as you alluded to, a complete refusal, almost tone-deaf posturing from the European, to be sure, and a part of the American establishment, in thus far as what Russia's legitimate interests are all about, how those interests should be taken into account in thus far as the long-term interest of everybody involved, and how do we begin to take into account the situation and proceed forward. Right now, we are not there yet. Far from it. If anything, everything we're hearing from Western capitals seems to be doubling down. You know, it doesn't work, let's double down. This is unfortunately what predominates right now.
Well, and also to all three of you, we have to consider the political angle here. There are many people that do not want to see Donald Trump get a win, as he calls it. So to obstruct Trump, they want the war to continue. That is the apex of cynicism. Peter, it's interesting. We look at the revisionism, as it was already mentioned here, and we see a whole lot of it going on as we approach Victory Day in Russia. It's May 9th, the 80th anniversary of the destruction of fascism in Europe. But there is another kind of revisionism in play that I think the West feels very uncomfortable with, and that is the reassessment of the end of the Cold War. Because in the West, there's the mantra, Russia lost, the Soviet Union lost the Cold War. The Russians say they exited, they no longer participated in it, which is a very different interpretation. Russia demands to be recognized as a great power again, and that is a reversal of the perception in the West that Russia was defeated. Peter.
Well, this whole thing seems to be predicated on a couple of very serious myths. The first one is that if Putin gets a win in Ukraine, he's going to gobble up one piece of Europe after another. I think that's madness. You know, I don't know, but that's what they did throughout the Cold War and since, playing upon people's fears in order to justify exorbitant military spending and a world in which we're threatened with extinction in order to somehow deter some other force from doing something terrible. And this idea that the Ukrainians can claw back the territory that they've taken, that they've lost. Neither of those is valid at all. But the question that you're raising about historical revisionism and the role of Russia in the world, I mean, Russia is a major player in the world, and the Russians are very proud, and they have interests, and they have hopes, and they see themselves in a certain way. So, yeah, the world is going to have to adjust. It's no longer the unipolar world that Krauthammer announced back in 1990, right? This is
Remember.
now a multipolar world. We've got this alliance between Russia and China. We've got other countries emerging. We've got the BRICS alliance becoming a major player globally at this point. And the United States is not going to be able to ride roughshod over the rest of the world as it did for many, many decades, as it has done most of the 80 years since World War II. So the Russians understand that. Some Americans understand that, but not enough Americans still understand that. And some of the Europeans are clinging to this idea that Europe is going to somehow replace the vacuum of the United States withdrawal.
Well,
Well,
let me ask that to
the willing.
let me address that to Steve. I mean, Europe, is it Stockholm syndrome? I mean, over the decades, the French say we need a new European defense pact. We have to distance ourselves from the Americans, and then it goes back in the other direction. I mean, what is it? Why do they need to cling to the United States so much? Because they don't want to take responsibility for their security, or if they do take responsibility for security, they'll realize that Russia isn't a threat.
I think the reason it's difficult to be to put my finger on one thing, but if I would say one thing, it's a lack of the capacity to think strategically across the leaders in Europe. And I think that with a few exceptions, such as Viktor Orban in Hungary, people are unable to distinguish between support to America and their own national interests, and it's becoming increasingly clear to me that support that's been given almost without question to America has been a big mistake. I look back at the moment, I'm looking at the back of Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, and now Ukraine. That's five failed interventions, only one of which should probably ever have happened, which is possibly Ukraine. So I think it's a failure of strategic thinking. I think as well in this particular intervention, the West has been guided by a political narrative, whereas Russia has been guided by a military strategy. And what the West is struggling with at the moment is they're having to come to terms with a political narrative which is falling apart around them as Russia wins on the battlefield. And I think the Americans are coming to terms with it more quickly, albeit in a slightly chaotic way, thanks to the
Okay,
Trump
well, we're going
administration.
to talk about that chaos in the second half of the program. Gentlemen, we have to go to a hard break. I'm going to jump in. And when we return, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Now, let me go to you here in Moscow. One of the interesting things that Donald Trump has said, he said a lot of things, okay? This war never would have happened if he had been president. He could end it in a day. A whole litany of things. But in the last few days, he said something, and I don't know if it's by accident, serendipity, just came into his head. Maybe somebody told him. We can't really tell at this point. But he said something that plays into this shifting narratives. And what I mean by that, Russia lost the war on the day of its invasion. Russia is using washing machine parts to fuel its missiles. Russia's run out of missiles. Russia's lost. Russia's already losing. Over and over again, we could spend an entire program going through that. But I don't know, Trump said something that's really quite interesting. I have saved Ukraine. We should end the war. I saved Ukraine from the rest of Russian occupation of the country. Now, all of us know it, and our viewers know that that is not the case. However, that is an interesting narrative shift to kind of make you stand up and think, well, okay, well, Ukraine still exists as a sovereign state. That's a good thing, isn't it? Talk about this narrative shifts, because that's the only way. The battlefield activity will continue. Geopolitical realities will remain. Political facts remain on the ground. But it's going to get for Western audiences to understand Trump's departure, it may need a rhetorical trick like, I saved Ukraine. I don't know.
Well, I don't know who advises Donald Trump, but to be sure, we are really looking at the contrast between the lightheadedness with which American policymakers are approaching the conflict, as opposed to, and everybody who follows the conflict understands that, in as far as Russia is concerned, it's an existential issue. And so Trump may try to somehow, and that's maybe why he was selected, you know, to somehow put some lipstick on a pig, but this is America's war. And he may say this is Biden's war, not my war. This is your war, buddy, whether you like it or not. The buck stops here. And Vladimir Putin was actually, for a moment, thinking that the alpha male stepped back into the room. He even alluded to the Europeans like little, you know, poodles would come around at some point. And what's hard to understand is that Donald Trump is completely ill-informed about the conflict, and he just thinks that by signing, you know, just for optics, this kind of a deal, mineral deals, which on its face, you know, is illegal because, well, the president of Ukraine is not legitimate or legally legitimate, he's going to get away with it and get a political win. And this is not the way it's going to work. So I think Russia is taking stock of the situation, is patiently allowing the Americans to state their positions. But in the wake of what we've been hearing the last 3 months, I think we're going to be seeing the special military operation proceed apace to fulfill its twin agenda, which is to demilitarize and denazify what used to be the bridge between the West and Russia, because it has no choice. And I think if Trump does not wake up and understand the seriousness of the situation, the reality on the ground will catch up with his current political rhetoric, and he will be left with another L to his current term.
You know, Peter, what's really frustrating for me, I mean, obviously all of us follow this very closely, you know, every single layer from day to day. But I'll tell you, one of the things that I find really frustrating is all of the voices in the Trump administration talking about this. And it's very, very confusing. For example, why is Keith Kellogg there? I mean, why does the United States need an envoy to Ukraine? Now, Ukraine is a vassal of the United States. I mean, why do you need an envoy? I mean, I find that very confusing. And he's given enormous amount of prominence about ideas that are so, you know, I mean, deaf tone to what's going on and countervailing to what other people in the administration. I mean, for better or worse, gentlemen, Steve Witkoff seems to have that portfolio, not the Secretary of State. And so it's, I mean, if I'm confused, then the Russian side must be just as confused. Peter.
I don't usually agree with Tom Friedman, but he said something that I like. He said, if you hire clowns, you should expect a circus. You know, and you look at this Trump administration and this cabinet choices and his advisors, these are clowns. These are not qualified, serious, thoughtful, intelligent people. So you've got Kellogg, who's effectively very, very bellicose in his statements. So he's been sidetracked. And then they bring in Witkoff, who's a little bit more balanced and reasonable. But you got people like Hegseth. Hegseth says, we have to end the war in Ukraine so we can go after the real enemy, China. I mean, they're all over the place. Rubio is effectively sidelined. Usually it's the Secretary of State who's doing the diplomacy. What do we hear from Rubio? That maybe that's because Rubio was so anti-Putin in an earlier life that now he can't get along with the Trump agenda.
Over the weekend, it was thrown back in his face, and he didn't acquit himself very well, just to highlight your point exactly. Keep going.
So, we're dealing with incompetence. But Lavrov said something to me that I find very interesting. He said, when I hear America first, it makes me think of Deutschland über alles. You know, so these people are not deluded. They're not tricked by what Trump and Trump's game is. They understand that Trump could turn on a dime against them and is threatened to do so if he doesn't get the deal that he wants to get. And now he's got this greater stake if this mineral deal goes through. So I haven't picked up any Russian leaders thinking that Trump is a trustworthy, reliable ally in any of this, or even an even-handed negotiator. So which is why, and part of the reason why some people are very pessimistic that this is going to end anytime soon. The Russians keep saying this is much too complicated. We're not going to get a deal in the first 24 hours, and we're not going to get a deal maybe in the first 4 months. But we have to keep, we need to really be sitting down and talking and figuring out what points we can agree on, what compromises both sides are willing to make, and how we proceed, we move forward. At least there's some momentum for talking at the moment, and we should see
what there is momentum for. Well, maybe it's slightly lessening here. Steve, if I can go to you in Cornwall, is that I think the Trump administration is mistakenly thinking that normalizing Moscow-Washington relations will solve the problem in Ukraine. That's an erroneous assumption. And if the assumption is that better relations can resolve it, the Americans and the Europeans are going to be sorely disappointed. Maybe the Europeans want to be disappointed, but the Trump administration will be disappointed. You can't have American missiles killing Russian civilians and have and better relations at the same time. It's impossible, at least in the long term. Steve.
Yeah, no, I think what's going on in the Trump White House is confusing. I think feels to me that there are two sort of sides of the Trump White House, so the Hegseths and the neocons, those people of that mindset. You could say Rubio's in there, although I did hear Rubio say almost at the start of his time, the recognition of a multipolar world, which is in itself a good thing, because actually is accepting that we're no longer in a unipolar world. I think the two who interest me are Tulsi Gabbard and J.D. Vance. Now, J.D. Vance is somebody who within Congress, at least a year ago, perhaps longer, was talking in a much more practical way about what was actually going on the battlefield and in a way which is realistic. And of course, you've also got Tulsi Gabbard, who as well has military experience, but is an intelligent person. So I think we're starting to see, for example, the Americans' most recent security intelligence review, we're starting to see a recognition in that review that it can't be won militarily in Ukraine. I think when it comes to Witkoff, I mean, I think Witkoff may be a property man. The good thing is that he seems to have Trump's ear, but also he's talking to Putin. I can't emphasize how important it is that at last we have a channel of communication and these conversations are going on. This is always going to be a long-term thing because of Russia's interest. It's this issue of the long-term solution for the security problems. But the fact that talking is going on is the right thing.
What's important to understand here, I mean, I think Western audience should understand, Russia would very much like to have a good relationship with the United States. That's high on the list. They do want that. That is not conveyed to Western audiences whatsoever. Russia is this kind of this gray monolithic, you know, one man rule. It is the portrait of Russia is so distorted. It has been for a very, very long time. But you know, the Russians would very much like to have a good relationship with the United States, would like to work with the United States on all kinds of problems around the world. It just has to be done as an equal and with respect. Arnaud, we're rapidly running out of time. Last week I did a program throwing in the towel. We heard that again from the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, that the U.S., and it could be this week, we're almost at the end of this week, that the United States could just walk away. Should we take that seriously? And is that something the Europeans would welcome? Because it seems to me that they're the ones that want to take the bellicose position towards Russia. Go ahead. I don't know.
Well, I think if politically it is deemed expedient, the Americans might just decide to, throw the towels. But throwing the towels is one thing if you decide to stop all weapons delivery, intelligence sharing, and of course financial support. If the United States keep on providing at least intelligence, if not equipment, and prompt the Europeans to ramp up their own military upgrade using American equipment, what kind of message does that send to Moscow? It means that the Americans are irresponsible, that they start fires, geopolitical fault lines and crises in key areas around the world. And when it doesn't go their way, they just seemingly walk away, but keep, you know, stoking the fire from a distance. This is not going to work. We need to have a complete retooling of the grand strategy, if any, that the Americans have for the world.
To wrap up, gentlemen, this has been a fascinating program, but I think one of the problems, I guess future historians will examine this time, is that it's almost a non-starter, nonsensical for a country that is a co-belligerent in a conflict to act as a mediator. And that is one of the problems the Trump administration has never been able to resolve. You can't play both at the same time and be a legitimate power broker, as it were. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Bethesda, Cornwall, and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.